evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, licensed counselor, and marriage and family therapist. This evening, we are discussing children and COVID-19. As our guests, we have licensed clinical social worker, Chelsea Vincent, licensed professional counselor, Jessica Oliver, and licensed clinical social worker, Michelle Kohler. We invite our listeners to call in with their questions or comments at 1-800-552-8502. So Chelsea, I'm gonna start with you. Tell us a little bit about your experience and what you do.
Well, thanks for inviting me on the show today to talk about this. As she said, I'm Chelsea Vincent. I am trained to work with children, families, individuals. I've worked with kids from basically birth and people up into their golden years. And so I specialize in working with trauma and attachment. So basically family relationships, parent-child relationships, couple relationships, play therapy. I work a lot with addiction and depression and anxiety. Those are a lot of things that we're seeing a prevalence of right now. And so that's kind of where my focus is.
And Jessica, tell us a little bit about you and what you do and your experience.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Jessica Oliver, and I'm the program coordinator at the Center for Children and Families. And I have a private practice. I focus mostly on trauma, with trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy for the kiddos that I work with. And I oversee the functional family therapy child welfare teams at our office who really take a relational approach in working with families who have experienced all sorts of things, but we typically have an influx of trauma clients right now. And so all different types of trauma and then COVID trauma on top of that. So that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
So Michelle, tell us about you, your experience and what you do.
Hi, everyone. Again, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Michelle, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I currently work in a group private practice at Elated Counseling, and I mostly see kids, but I have a few adults. My background is primarily in kids. I work a lot with attachment and depression and trauma and anxiety, and that's a lot of what we're seeing right now, obviously. And I used to work a lot in the schools. So school was really my background. So I had a lot of interactions with behavior issues in school and doing therapy in a school setting. But yeah, kind of all over the place. And I like to, I bring in a lot of different approaches. So I like to kind of pick from wherever people need help from and go from there, where their goals are and build on different approaches. So it's me.
Well, great. It sounds like you ladies will definitely be able to help some of the parents out there who are dealing with their children and everything that we're going through right now, how to address their questions about COVID-19, and then also how to deal with homeschooling for people who've never homeschooled before. I invite our listeners to join our conversation on children and COVID-19. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we know that it's important to encourage children and teenagers to ask questions and to express their feelings. What suggestions would you have to really encourage children and support children in asking questions that they might have or expressing feelings that they might have about COVID-19?
I think where I would start is asking them maybe what they understand about what's going on to get a baseline for where they're at. And then I would really focus on validating what they're feeling. And some things that may seem like a small matter to us are a really big deal to them because they're trying to make sense of all this, just like the rest of us. And so creating that space where they feel like they're validated and that their emotions are important, and helping them even figure out what those emotions are, whether, oh, that emotion is anxiety that you're feeling, or that's worry, or you might be frustrated because things aren't the way they used to be. Or so helping them have some words to express what they're feeling is really helpful, just building that vocabulary and that emotional intelligence so that they can begin to process what's going on and normalizing it.
So you mentioned creating, a safe space for children to talk about these things. How would you instruct a parent to create that supportive environment?
Sometimes it's just making time to have those conversations when things, maybe some one-on-one time with each of those kids or before bedtime or when, throughout the day. Sometimes it helps to put kids' defenses down if you start playing with them, because then their hands are busy and it frees up their mind, and then you can start to have a conversation. So bring out a deck of cards, start playing a game, and then just start talking. What are you thinking about what's happening? Are you scared about what's happening? What do you think might happen in the future? What do you expect school to be like? So that they can start to verbalize their lived experience and some of the concerns they have. I think that's the uncertainty is really hard for all of us in this, not knowing what 2 months are going to look like. And so especially for kids where they're used to the routine of knowing what to expect of school.
Yeah, I've always found it very helpful when I'm working with children and even teenagers to give them some kind of activity, like playing cards or coloring or drawing or whatever. And, bringing up some difficult topics while you're doing that seems like the activity kind of distracts a little bit and soothes a little bit. And it's a little bit easier for them to talk about some of those things that can be challenging or difficult for them.
Definitely. Play-Doh is a great one, too.
Yeah.
Hands busy, slime, all those different.
Michelle, Jessica, do y'all have any suggestions for parents when, they're wanting to really encourage children to express their feelings and ask questions?
Yeah, I think whenever we're creating a safe space, it's really important to be curious. When we are curious, we set the child up to develop their own words, and we can help them out with those words. But if we put if we're talking too fast or too much, we can put our own words into their little heads, and we're their superheroes because we're their parents. So, they might take on to what we're saying. So I would just say, be open and say, I wonder what the kids think about all this. And they'll tell you, well, the kids on the street think this, so just open that up for a curious place.
Yeah, I was really thinking along similar lines. I think a lot of the kids I've been talking to will quote things that sound like they came right from their parents' mouth. So I'm like, they really hear what we're taking in. And so I think the important part is being curious and waiting to hear what they have to say and realizing that, hey, they do listen when we're talking. And maybe even if we think we're in another room, they're going to pick up on our feelings too. So if we're giving off anxiety feelings about how we feel about it, it's really easy for them to pick up on those. So being careful to not put our own words and our own thoughts into our children and letting them have a space to say it without invalidating their own thoughts. So when they do finally share too, and not saying, oh, well, that's not going to happen, or that's not true, like not jumping in with belittling or minimizing their own fears. Cause even for us, it may not feel like something big, but if they're taking the time to share it with us, it probably feels big to them.
So. Yeah. Often we'll tell parents, the two important phrases, as far as children are, tell me more about that. And what do you think about that? And, because sometimes you don't have to have all the answers. Sometimes you can just, encourage the child to keep talking and they'll kind of come to their own resolution or answer on their own. Now sometimes they are searching for a definite answer, but sometimes also you can just kind of wait and let them get it all out and they'll kind of get to their own resolution. So should we be completely honest with children about COVID-19?
Shelley, I have been thinking about this and I use this phrase in my head a lot. Be direct, but protect. So it's kind of like a little thing to help me remember, like, okay, use the least amount of words possible, explain it on an appropriate age level, but in the appropriateness comes protection. And so I do think that we need to protect their little minds from just worrying about every little thing that as adults we are worrying about, because they are having to, you know, school is their job. They're having to worry about that. And am I going to have enough friends? And oh my goodness, some of these kids are worried about, is there going to be enough food on the table? Like, what is going to go on here? And so, yes, I think we can talk to them about it directly and just shelter them as needed.
Michelle, Chelsea, what are y'all's thoughts about honesty with children?
I agree a lot with what Jessica said in terms of we don't want to talk in a way that increases fear and anxiety. And so being mindful of how we express things and how we, even as I'm around kids, I try to be careful about what I say and how I say it to other adults, like Jessica's saying, because they are picking up, they are listening. And so, but I think it can also be an opportunity to help us show kids how to handle stress, uncertainty, fear, anxiety, and admit to them there's things that we know, things we don't know. And so we have to learn to tolerate kind of the unknown and keep moving forward. And so we as adults, it's our job to model that resilience. And so that's a big, I think a big part of telling the truth, but using it as an opportunity to learn how to handle some of these uncertainties.
I agree with what they both said, but I also want to add that kids are also really good at knowing when we don't tell them the truth or when we're lying. They pick up on that and they are quick to tell you. And so they, I don't know, and then that just ruins the whole lack of trust. So if you want to have that trust with them, I think being as honest as you feel is age appropriate is always a good rule of thumb. I mean, there's ways you can go about it. Like, I love to use comparisons between like pop cultural references, like video games, movies, TV shows, everyone loves. Like, if there's a way we can tie in like something that feels not as scary as real life, but just ways of coping, ways of using different skills that they can see in movies or shows that they already like, and tying that in to make it less threatening, or an analogy that feels more kid friendly. I don't know. I prefer to bridge it that way and then bring it into a real world situation. So.
And we have a caller. We have Mary from Dry Prong. Mary, you can go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for doing this, because it is so confusing and there's so many ways to approach it. I have two little boys, one going into middle school, but one of them is so lonely. What are some good ways for me to help them get through just the loneliness that this has caused?
Mary, thank you so much for your question. Thanks for calling in. I want to let you know that I think that we all are feeling you and your son and your loneliness, and I appreciate you being honest with that. And props to you for picking up and noticing his loneliness. Sometimes we can get too busy and in what we're doing to notice our children and what they're struggling with and what they need. And so I think first and foremost, if you wanted to reach out to him as a mom and just let him know, a lot of times our transparency as adults and as parents, as counselors, really goes a long way with kids when we do it in a safe way, you know, maybe one-on-one, or maybe if we have some ice cream, you know, and we're doing it together in a safe space.
Right.
And talk to him about his loneliness and maybe get some ideas from him, because he might have ideas of how he could be less lonely. And that gives him some control in the situation that we literally have no control in this whole thing. And that's what's so frustrating.
Right.
Hi, this is Michelle. I just want to thank you for calling. I'm so sorry. Oh, I wanted to thank you for calling in as well. I think loneliness is one of the biggest issues that keeps coming up right now, especially with school starting back up and people not sure if they want to go back to school or not, if they're going to get to see their friends or be around people. And I think it's a time to get really creative with ways to be social or find a way to make friends, because especially middle school is hard anyway, because you're trying to figure out where you fit in, what your group of friends are, and I don't know if he's just starting middle school or already in it, but even then finding your interest in a group of people that are similar is tricky. But I know people have gotten really creative with like Zoom friend dates and like, or cars, like even driving to a parking lot and backing up. But I mean, it's a time to get creative. So if he has an interest in something, like I know there's still like batting ranges are open, like things like that, that you can still be social distance and find ways to do things that you're still comfortable with. And I'm not saying you need to get out and go do something, but like even like a Zoom friend date or something, like where you just have popsicles and you both have popsicles and sit and talk. Or I know there's ways to make it still socially distanced and still be creative with it. And like Jessica was saying, you know, he might have some ideas already too, based on what he's interested in. But definitely I think this loneliness is such a big thing. And that's what we're worried about when our kids don't go to school, right? Is that they're not going to have friends. They're not going to learn the social skills. We're going to miss out on all those developmental pieces. But building on like ways that we can wrap around it and maybe find a way to still have some social interactions or ways to meet people through common interests. There's some ways out there. You just got to get really creative.
Yeah.
And sometimes what I will do with children is if I don't have a lot of ideas and they don't have a lot of ideas, then I'll say, you know what, let's go over to the computer together and let's ask Google. And we do a Google search together and just look and see what kind of ideas are coming up. You know, is there, you know, are there some articles on it or things like that, you know, might help to give you both some ideas. And sometimes it's helpful to involve the child in that process so right. that they feel like they are part of the problem solving.
Right.
Thank you so much for your call, Mary.
Oh, thank you so much for like any kind of guidance. I appreciate it.
I invite our listeners to call with your question or comment on children and COVID-19. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So, Chelsea, you mentioned a little while ago that when we're talking to children, that we need to make sure that it's developmentally appropriate. What suggestions do you ladies have for making sure that what we are saying is developmentally appropriate?
I think that's starting with what they understand is helpful, and Jessica kind of alluded to that, and then taking it from there, using really, if they're really little, use simple language. Sometimes things like picture books are really helpful. Maybe a book about germs or a book about, you know, some people are even experiencing death during this time. And so talking about what that means, if that's something that your family's dealing with, or drawing things out if they're really.
We have temporarily lost Chelsea. So Michelle, Jessica, anything that y'all would like to add to that?
I think just something simple when we're struggling in this time of getting out and doing things, you could just call your pediatrician's office and ask them, like they typically have an intern or someone there that could send you by email a list of like, hey, these are developmental stages that you can focus on. And here's bullet point A, B, and C of what to look for and how to talk to your kid. Like I get that every time I take my kids to a wellness visit. So you could do that, or like Google or Bing is your friend. So use that. And that's empowering to you because now you've learned something on your own too. And you can take that. And once you learn it on your own, then you know it. And so you're able to continue using that in the future.
Yeah. When I was doing a little research for this show, I found lots of resources on how to talk to children, how to talk to children who are different ages, how to answer their questions, and just, you know, several really good resources that provided me with some great information. And this is something I do every day. So there were new things for me to learn even. So yeah, you know, just do that computer search. And there are lots of suggestions out there.
I was also going to add for the little ones, Daniel Tiger actually is in like 2 weeks going to do a episode about the pandemic to help talk to kids about things to do. So things like that, I like to pull on those because they usually have pretty good takeaways for kids that are developmentally appropriate, especially for the younger crowd. So it's just something I was going to add, but.
Yeah, no, that's a great suggestion because that's a good show on PBS for little ones to learn a lot of things. So that's a great suggestion. So what about talking with teenagers? Are any tips for talking with them about these issues? I mean, can we be completely straightforward and honest with them, or are they still too young for us to not shield a little bit?
I think it depends on the child, obviously, too, where they're at. So I think a lot of teenagers can comprehend, you know, that something's dangerous, but they're still at the point of, you know, it's not affecting me directly, so it probably can't be that bad. Like, so they're still in that developmental phase of, you know, hey, I can comprehend that this is there, but if it's not really directly impacting me, then it's really hard to really understand what it is. But that also doesn't mean you have to do the shock value and scare them either. It just means that they might just need to hear it a couple more times, or it's just something new for them to wrap around. But I also think being really honest with older kids is really important, because if you don't give them the answers, they're going to look for it elsewhere. I can get from their friends or something, and it may not be right, it might not be accurate, and then it could inform how they're thinking. The same thing goes for a lot of topics, but especially for things right now where we're already anxious, it'd be much better to have that open dialogue with them, and they know they can trust you and get answers. And again, like we've been talking about, you know, going online and searching for things together. So if they ask you a question you don't know, let's go look at it together. Let's go do this together. It's a great way to start another conversation too, and answering those questions. So I do think as parents, especially with our kids, that we get so caught up in how we're feeling about all of it that we forget that they also have feelings about it too. And it may not be the same as our own too, where we just think they're doing okay because, hey, they're playing video games all day, or hey, they're just on their phone all day. We think that they're fine, when in reality, like, they might need us to check in and go and have some of these conversations with them, because that might just be their way of escaping, and we're too caught up in our own feelings of it. So I think with older kids especially, it's so easy to just say, hey, they're old enough, they can handle it, they're by themselves, they probably are doing fine, because we need to deal with our own stuff. Whereas that may not always be the case. So having those check-ins and doing things together and asking questions is going to go a long way.
Call in with your question or comment on children and COVID-19. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So, and this kind of touches on what Mary was talking about a little bit. How can we help children stay in touch with their support systems, their friends, their family? How do we keep those lines of communication going during this time?
Sorry, this is Chelsea. My call dropped for a second, so I'm back. I don't know if this has been said, but we've talked about video chat, Zoom, things like that. But even getting back to some of the old fashioned things, having them write letters. I saw something where they traced, this is more for a younger kid, but they traced their arms on a piece of paper and sent it in the mail to the grandparents for a hug. So it was showing that we're still thinking about you, even though we can't give you a hug in person. So little things like that, to maybe reviving some of those old traditions of snail mail.
This is Jessica hopping on. I know we do still have to discipline in this time, obviously, but if we could possibly try to limit the connection as a discipline, because kids really do need the connection, and that is how most teenagers feel heard, is by their group, their clique, understanding them and hearing them and feeling them. And so obviously, you know, if it's a tough friend that, you know, the two are really getting in trouble, you have to make that decision as a parent, but maybe not taking the phone away totally for 4 months, you know, so that they can still have that connection. Obviously you can monitor it. You can set up specific times in the day, whatever you need to do to make you feel comfortable and to make sure that your child is understanding the lesson. But I do think that they thrive through connectivity.
I was just gonna say, add another thing I saw. Oh, this is Michelle, sorry. But I was gonna add that I've seen like cooking parties and like just people being really creative again, but they all made something and they made the other people guess that they saw the ingredients. And so everyone on the Zoom chat would make something and they didn't tell anyone until the end of the, and so people had to guess along the way what they thought others were making. And so I don't know, there's just ways to get creative out there. And I know personally from my, like my little neighborhood and areas, I've noticed people kind of making like little small pods, I think is what they're calling. I think there was even a Wall Street Journal, but like people finding little groups of friends that they know they feel safe with. So it might be one or two other families. And I mean, obviously that's a personal choice. I wouldn't say go do it if you're feeling uncomfortable with it, but some people are feeling safe in like a group of like two families that they're used to always being around and comfortable. And so there's still some socializing happening that way.
Yeah, I think that all those are great suggestions. And I think, Jessica, that maybe something, what you mentioned was something that, you know, we may forget about, that, you know, when children are in school or teenagers are in school, they are able to go to school and still socialize, even if they get their computer taken away or their phone taken away or things like that. But they don't really have that that ability to reach out to their friends right now as freely. unless they do it through the phone or computer or something like that. And so completely cutting off access to that can be particularly difficult right now. So definitely, you know, that's something to maybe limit or monitor, but maybe not something that you want to completely take away right now. So what about, and this kind of ties in with the social support, what about social skills? You know, a really important thing for children and adolescents, teenagers, is developing social skills. And the way that they do that is being around peers and adults and, you know, just other people. Since, you know, a lot of us are having to limit that, how can children continue to learn social skills if they're not around other people to be social?
Hi, this is Michelle again. This is my favorite things to talk about, honestly, because I think it's so easy to find social skills in like pop culture references again, like tie it into things that they're already watching. Because I know we're all probably watching a lot more TV than usual. But like I know in the very beginning when Frozen 2 was on Disney Plus, there were a ton of people watching that. And even Frozen 2 has scenes where we can pull from. So we sit down with our kids and you pick out certain scenes. I know Olaf in one scene particularly is saying, this is how we deal with things that are out of our control. You know, like we call this dealing with thing. Or I'm trying to remember his exact wording, but basically everything feels out of control, but he's sitting there trying to find a way to be in control of the situation. And so finding things like that, but there's taking turns, there's getting upset and finding feelings and social skills in movies. And so I like to pull from that. I think we all assume that our kids just know certain things like taking turns and listening to others. And we sometimes forget that they need to hear that a lot of times and they need to see it a lot of times and model it. And I mean, simple as like brushing your teeth. Like I assume my son knows how to brush his teeth. He's 5 and he's done it forever, but I go and watch him and I'm like, wait, I taught you this when you're 2 and still somehow you're not doing it the way we talked about when you're 2. So I think it's the same with social skills. We teach them once or twice and we assume they know. And then we kind of assume that the rest of it falls into place when they're around friends or whatever, when we could really be teaching them again, repeating again to hopefully like remind them of that. So I know it's not the same as those interactions we're getting with other people, but there's other places we can draw on. And it's definitely a skill we already know how to teach. We know a lot of basic social skills that we can teach our kids. So I know when we get all their schoolwork, that can seem overwhelming, but social skills is something we know. It's something as parents that we can usually teach pretty easily if we stop and think about it.
I agree with what you said, Jessica. This is Chelsea. And I think really when it comes down to it, social skills begin in the family. So even though they might not be around the friends and the peers their age, which is really important for their social development, reinforcing some of those skills we would want them, like respect for boundaries. Right now, personal space is a really vital skill to be aware of. And so talking about how and having like, Michelle saying about other people's feelings and talking about what do you think other people might be feeling during this time, whether it's excited or scared or uncertain, or, you know, some people are maybe because they're feeling anxious, they're a little bit stressed and they might be irritable. And so talking about why people are irritable, and that's one way children sometimes manifest some of their anxiety or depression is through irritability or And so helping us understand that, well, when people are having a hard day, what can we do to help them feel better? Even if it's at the grocery store, you know, as you're checking out, asking the cashier how their day is and engaging in little conversations just to build some of those basic interaction skills.
Hey, this is Jessica. Whatever parents you think your hashtag good old days is, that's what we need to do right now with our kiddos. We need to put our phones down and do with them what we wish that they were doing, like any games or fun things that we did when we were younger. Just do it. You may be exhausted because some of you have probably been working from home the entire time. I know I did. My husband and I both worked from home and had our 2-year-old and 1-year-old at home the entire time. So exhausted. But every single afternoon we walked around the block. We wrote with chalk on the sidewalk, all of these things just to make sure that our kiddos that are in a very vital learning phase right now, they're learning everything because they're toddlers. They weren't in daycare for 3.5 months. So anything that you can teach them, they're going to pick up on it more because, again, you are their parent, you are their hero. So just put your phone down. I'm talking to myself as well.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes parents forget that really simple activities can help children and teenagers build skills and social skills. So, you know, cooking together, that's almost like a team activity. You know, how do we work together? How, you know, helping each other, playing a board game, that teaches children how to take turns, how to be a good winner, how to be a good loser. You know, and then there are lots of games that involve communication and things like that. So, so a lot of the activities that we may think of as, oh, well, we're just cooking together or we're just playing a game together, you know, those are great ways to teach social skills and are great learning opportunities for children and teens. So one thing that is really important, well, actually three things that are really important to children and also teenagers are structure, routine, and predictability. So during this time that is so unstructured and so unroutine and so unpredictable, how do we regain that structure and that routine and that predictability? Any suggestions?
It's like anytime we have changes in our life, we have to find a new routine. And even though it might be a temporary routine, so it might be doing the same thing when you wake up in the morning and having it, we need to be flexible because there's so much that's changing, but at least have some sort of outline for this is what our days are going to look like, especially if you're trying to balance school and work and, you know, the other things that come with family life. And it's also, I liked what you mentioned about the cooking or some of the household tasks. It's a time that we can work together to build those family relationships and also create a routine, which routines make us feel safe. They make us feel like we can predict things. And that's really helpful for kids when they are facing all this uncertainty. I think structuring in free time for play for children is really important, whether that's going outside. That has tons of benefits for our mental health, is being outside, being in the sunshine, you know, going for a walk, playing together. And maybe it's all you can really do is say, you know, we're going to do every Friday night or every Saturday, we're going to do some, you know, we're going to make pizzas together, or we're going to play games together, or we're going to watch a movie together, so that people have something to look forward to at the end of the week. You know, and it kind of gives us also postmarkers for our week. Some of those postmarkers we've usually had are gone. And so trying to reinstate some of those in creative ways, I think, is helpful for kids and families.
So I would say one of the easiest ways to, well, first of all, I agree with everything that you just said, but one of the ways to make yourself have a routine is to give yourself evidence of when the routine works. If you look back on a day where you had a routine and you can sit there at the end of the day and say, okay, well, we all survived and we thrived a little bit. Like, okay, great. That's wonderful. Try your routine. Try not doing your routine for a couple of days and you feel like the house is on fire and you're sweating and you still have the pajamas on that you wore 2 days ago and no one's teeth are brushed and there's this and that, and like everything is just out of sorts. You can sit there and look at that and say, okay, this evidence gives me enough motivation to set my alarm. And even on your alarm, you can say, start the coffee pot and set out 3 bananas for the kids, you know, however, because you may be homeschooling your child this year for the very first time, you know, I don't know. But just because the letters LPC are behind my name does not mean I have my life together at all times, especially during my very first pandemic ever. So I didn't do my routine for a couple of weeks, 2 full weeks during the pandemic. And I felt like my life was spiraling. So you can imagine what that feels for your child who is used to a routine. And I 100% agree with the play and the rest. You've got to schedule play and you've got to schedule rest. Especially if you are going to be taking on some kind of teaching routine, You need to schedule rest for yourself because you are not a teacher. You are a mother and you may be something else as well. So don't try to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. You can do it though.
And this is Chelsea. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to add to what Jessica said, where even just getting up and getting ready for the day, even if you're going to be in your house all day, helps us differentiate the beginning of our day and then the end of our day. So it gets us geared up to do whatever we need to do, even if we're doing it at home. Sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
No, you're fine. The one thing I came up with early on, I don't know if everyone has heard there's like a saying around Christmas time where you get something they want, something they need, something to wear and something to read, I think is how it goes. But I played around with that and I added something to use during this time. And I came up with something routine, something to try, something outside and something to gratify. And so I was like, when I started thinking of all those, so I made sure I did like those four things every day for a while. And I lost my routine too. And when I was out of it, I could feel it. But the routine thing, like you guys have talked about, is coffee. Coffee was like my routine every day. I had to get up, make my coffee. Something to try. We got into cooking a lot too, like as a family, or trying new things. And I know one that we did was really fun was we turned apples into donuts. We cut them sliced and we decorated them like donuts. So still apple slices, I don't know, just easy little fun things. And then, so I tried different recipes a lot and Pinterest was my best friend for a lot of those things. Something outside. So definitely making sure we get outside every day. Even when it was raining, we went out in puddles, jumped, anything, like just to get out. So something outside. And then the last thing was something to gratify. So I was encouraging everyone to find something that made them feel good. So something that just would make them smile and feel good. And so I was like, if we could do those four things every day, I feel like I felt accomplished at the end of the day, even if they were simple things to fill those categories. Another thing that was really cool for routine that I had some clients try was, I don't know if you've heard of it. This was a Pinterest idea as well, but it was Monopoly money, using it for chores and incentives. And so in order to establish some kind of routine, I had clients set up a whiteboard in their house and they could write down the chores and how much Monopoly money they would get each day. And then some got really creative and would like whoever had the most money by the end of the day of the siblings would get to pick the movie they watched that night or things like that they could do as a family. But this worked really well, obviously, if there were siblings and you're in age. But so there were just some fun things to try there that could make a routine too, because you're doing the chores, you're getting up and there's incentive behind it. So anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah, those are great, great suggestions. And one thing that I have recommended to my folks is, you know, you don't have to get up at the exact same time that you got up for work. You don't have to, go to bed at the exact same time. But if you can try to get up and go to bed within an hour of what your usual schedule is, and have a pretty set schedule for meals and try to keep those around the same time, at least you have those anchors that are familiar, that are similar to your pre-COVID life. And also, once we are able to get more into our old routines, it'll be easier to get back into those than if we, you know, go from getting up at 6 o'clock every morning and then start getting up at 10 o'clock every morning and things like that. So, you know, trying to be flexible, but also trying to stick to those routines that we've already established as much as we can. That will help give us and then also children a sense of familiarity. I want to invite our listeners to call in and join our conversation on children and COVID-19. Call 1-800-552-8502 with your question or comment. So I know a lot of the kids and even adults that I see have really kind of become couch potatoes and are not staying as physically and mentally active. And those things are really important in fighting, you know, depression and anxiety and all kinds of things. So what tips do y'all have for keeping children, young children, older children, teenagers active, both mentally and physically?
This is Michelle. I think it goes back to some of those, like doing things together as a family, like getting out and trying to do some things. I know my kids respond better if I'm like, hey, let's go for a bike ride, or hey, let's go do this, versus if I just say, hey, go outside and play. So it's going to be a lot better if I can say, or even the older kids usually respond well to some kind of competition. I've seen like Fitbit challenges or other things where like who can have the most steps in a week, or just some way to like make it into like a family competition or family engagement together that can help build it up. I know going out hiking is still pretty feasible in most places, like getting out and going and exploring new places. Not far from here, like there's like campgrounds and RV parks that are still open. You can rent things. So I don't know how comfortable people are, but there's options you can do to get out and move around a little bit and just explore that can make it exciting too, or different from the usual.
I think it also helps to limit screen time, not just for adults, but for kids, and maybe schedule screen time during the parts of the day that are hottest. But if you can get up and part of your routine is maybe to go for a walk first thing, or if it is a hot part of the day and you can, you know, turn a sprinkler on in your yard and let the kids run around so that they're getting some sunshine, some vitamin D. That's also good for their immune system, and the lymphatic system starts moving as they exercise and they're active. And if they're not using screens so much, encourage them to kind of like what Michelle said, maybe learn something new or read books. I think some of the libraries are open. It's hard to keep track of how things open and close, but if people feel comfortable going and getting a book, or encouraging people to engage in art and music and sports, whether that's with maybe just kind of the pod that we talked about earlier, or with just your family, whether it's, you know, let's go play a soccer game together, or that way everybody's getting out. So that's my two cents. Jessica, you wanted to say something?
Well, I just think that we've been given a unique opportunity here that I hope is only a once in a lifetime opportunity to just grow together with our people. You know, we've talked about how connectivity is something that we all thrive on. And I think that this is our chance to do that with our kids and really get to know our kids. You know, a lot of times I see parents and they say, like, I don't even know my kid. Well, this is the time to do that. And so do things with them, even if you're exhausted. Like, I hate exercise. I'll be honest with you. I don't want to do it, but like I have to sometimes, or I feel bad. So if you do it with your kiddos, learn them, and then teach them something fun that you used to do that could get you guys out and doing something and moving and bond with your people.
So I know that one thing that a lot of parents are really struggling with has been homeschooling. I know that most of them have gotten a brief respite, but some of them may be starting back at it pretty soon. So what tips for balancing if a parent is at home, they're working, they're caring for children, and now they're also having to teach children, what recommendations do you have for doing all of that and not losing your mind?
Well, this is Jessica again. I really want to go back to the routine, keep that, but also remember that you are not a certified teacher, and that's okay. You are being called to do something during this time period that you may not be equipped to do, and you may not even feel equipped to do. And so I think just with talking with some of the teachers that we kind of work closely with, if you can support the classroom teacher, say you're doing virtual, if you can support the classroom teacher in any way, I think it would help you, your kid, and the teacher. So just an email of like, hey, is there something we could do different? What are you seeing from us? Just so that they know you're responsive, and so that they can see that you guys are all on a team and not working against one another. I think that would be super helpful. And then if you're homeschooling all the way, props to you. I can't imagine the difficult decision that must have been to change your whole entire life to do that. And so I want you to feel empowered and encouraged in that. But please don't hold yourself to the standard of a teacher who is, being graded by her principal. They come in and they do those evaluations all the time. Like, don't hold yourself to that standard. Feed the kids, get them up, get them halfway dressed. Let's work on our assignments for the day. Let's get some rest. Let's get some playtime. And we'll try to do homework for a minute. And then we're going to cook together and we're going to be a family, because this is weird.
Jessica, I loved what you said about adjusting expectations. I think during this time, we all need to be aware of the expectations we have of what life was like a couple months ago, and realize we're all in this storm that we're trying to navigate. And so having grace for ourselves, just recognize we're all doing the best we can. And some days our best is going to look
better than other days. And, you know, some days if everybody's just, you know, fed by the end of the day, let's call that a victory. And also realizing that there's a lot of things we can teach. And from a homeschooling perspective, a lot of things we learn that don't necessarily have to come out of a structured lesson. Making cookies is a math lesson, right? Or cutting out shapes is also a math lesson. Or even children, especially younger children, learn a lot from their play. And so giving them time to just problem solve in their play is vital. That's a critical skill that they need to learn. And focusing on that learning right now might look a little bit different than what it's formerly looked like, and embracing that change and this opportunity to learn new ways to experience math or science, or, you know, cooking is also science. It's chemistry if you're baking. And so recognizing that it doesn't always have to look like what we expect it to look like, and they'll be learning.
I really agree with what both Jessica and Chelsea were saying. Like, that realistic expectations piece is huge, because when we started quarantine back in March, I feel like the expectations were there that the kids needed to be learning and sitting for 6 hours a day, just like they were in school. And I feel like that a lot of parents took that on as if, like, I have to do this. And we obviously had no clue because we're not teachers. And so it became really stressful. And now we're going into another school year still having some of those expectations, when in reality, there's a lot of, like, developmental stuff, like Jessica was saying, or like Chelsea was saying as well, that, you know, we can do math in the kitchen. We can use a lot of hands-on stuff to make learning fun. And they don't need to sit and learn for 6 hours a day. Like, in school, it's set up that way differently because they're actually in school. And I'm viewing this time as more of a time, I mean, this is for me personally, but I'm viewing it as a time of, like, getting to see my kids learn now. So I get to see where their learning process is, but I can tailor it how I want to as well. And I keep reminding myself, you know, that, you know, a lot of people are going to be behind. The biggest fear I think a lot of parents have is my kid's going to get behind. It's going to fall behind. I don't know how to teach them. And I keep thinking, okay, well, we're all kind of in the same boat together. I think teachers can adjust and move as well. Like, so once we kind of all get back to, if there is a normal routine, I think there's going to be a big understanding of, hey, we have some catching up to do with some people might be on track. You know, we're all going to be at different places, and it's going to be a big game of, like, how are we going to work on this? And I think everyone wants to come together and make sure we're all trying to get to the same page. And I think we're all going to be different places, and I think there's going to be a bigger understanding of that. That's my hope anyway. But I want to believe that, you know, we're all going to be understanding of, like, hey, we all went through this together. We need to figure out how to get everyone onto the same page and where we need to be with those expectations that are more realistic, instead of expecting everyone to be exactly where all second graders used to be last year, instead of thinking, okay, well, they might still have more things to learn, and let's fill in those gaps and backtrack a little bit, and it'll be a little more understanding. So I don't know. And then the other piece, I know we were talking about parents for ourselves, you know, check in on yourself, do self-care, do things like, if you're still working, you're working and balancing teaching as a parent, that's a lot. It's a really big timetable, because you're making sure your kid's getting all the work done. You're not just checking on homework. Now you're making sure they're doing school and going into their Zoom meetings. So that's going to be a lot on you. So make sure you're also doing self-care for yourself.
And we have a listener call. We have Maddie from Keithville. Maddie, you can go right ahead with your question or comment.
Thank you. I'm actually wondering about alone time. I actually have three boys. My oldest will be 13 next month, and then I have an 11-year-old and a 3-year-old. So I'm sure you can imagine that alone time is pretty hard to find, particularly as we're all stuck in the house together. So how much alone time do you think that the older children need, and how would you propose I go about doing that?
Hi, Maddie. Thank you for calling in. This is Jessica. I think it's important for everyone to have alone time, but I also think that, you know, your question in that is good, because we want to monitor to make sure they're not isolating, because isolating can be really lonesome and, you know, can trigger some different things, some different behaviors, different emotions. So I think, I hate to keep going back to this, but kind of make it a routine, give each of you guys an alone time. And the way that I do that in my house is that's the only time that my children get to watch, like Mickey Mouse. For me, it's Mickey Mouse, but they get to watch Mickey Mouse. They sit there, they watch it, they drink their cup, they have their snack, they move on. And so if you can set it up in a routine, that would be good.
And we actually have another caller. We have John from Fishville. John, go right ahead with your question or comment.
I've got a comment. Excuse me. I see my children, no, not my children, they're my great-grandkids kids. I see one trick they're using that really seems to be a good thing to do, and that's to take your fourth grader and have that become your teacher for your second grader. They love to do that, and it does really create a relationship between those two children. Try that as a little bit of a add-on to the homeschooling.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, especially for, you know, teaching responsibility and social skills and helping others and things like that. Thank you, John.
Okay.
So ladies, we have just a few more minutes. I'd like to see if y'all have any suggestions as far as resources for parents that are going to be trying to, you know, school at home coming up. Any resources that y'all would suggest for parents?
I think sometimes one of our best resources is people who've already done homeschool. So asking them, especially if they have similar values to you or, you know, because there's curriculum based on, you know, some are religiously based or some are more secular. And so seeing what your friends or family do that has been helpful for them. There's so many online resources. There's lots of parent support groups online for homeschooling, whether that's, you know, Facebook or other places have support groups. There's, and depending on what type of learning model that you're wanting to use, there are workshops that you can take for, you know, people who, for instance, like Montessori, there's Children of the Redwoods, and she does homeschooling Montessori, and so she teaches courses so parents know how to incorporate Montessori into their homeschooling. But there's so many different resources, which sometimes can be overwhelming, but I think asking people that you have watched do homeschool and you feel like, you know, their kids are doing well and that's where you would want to maybe start is asking friends and family.
Just do a quick search at the top of your Facebook, if you're on Facebook, of, you know, Shreveport homeschool groups, and several different things will pop up and you can ask to join those groups, and you can learn a lot from that. There's groups all over the place like that. So that would be my quick tip.
Michelle, do you have any suggestions?
I didn't have anything else to add to that. I was going to suggest the Facebook groups as well. I'm going to throw one little controversial thing out there, though, of something that might be helpful for our kids, too, going forward. It's okay if you're not a supporter of it or anything, but just to let parents know, there are some good resources on TikTok. There are some therapists actually on TikTok that actually bring in some good ideas on how to understand anxiety. And we already know a lot of our teens are probably on there anyway, but if, like, we can direct them in ways that we approve of or like, there could be some resources out there for our kids as well. Especially teens.
Great. And I think that, you know, reaching out to people who have already been homeschooling is a great idea, because I know I have a family member who homeschools, and you know, she's just a wealth of information and ideas because she's been there, done that. And so it's a great kind of shortcut to becoming a little more proficient in this. And I think also just reminding ourselves that, you know, teachers go to college for this. They have specialized training. They do, you know, teaching internships. And so don't expect yourself to be teaching at a level that a professional does overnight. So it's okay if you're not doing the same level of teaching that that your child's teacher does, because that's completely understandable, given that you don't have the same background that the teacher does. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Do y'all have one final comment or suggestion for parents out there regarding COVID-19 and children?
I would say right now. Oh,
you go ahead.
Sorry. This is Chelsea. Grace and patience with each other. And when people are feeling a lot of really difficult emotions and maybe some distress, so when we make mistakes, rather than beat ourselves up or feel like we've created problems, it's a great time to model forgiveness and apologizing and how to, you know, if you're stressed and you yelled at your kids, going back later and saying, you know, I'm sorry, I was, you know, feeling frustrated and overwhelmed and I didn't treat you right. And so this is a great time to teach each other how to repair relationships when we don't do things just the way we wanted and show that love to each other.
Well, this is Jessica Oliver. Thank you so much for having me. And everyone listening, I would just say embrace your season. We're going to get through it and then we'll be on to the next season, figuring the next thing out. Thank you guys for listening with us.
And thank you, ladies, for being with us. Thank you so much, Jessica Oliver and Chelsea Vincent and Michelle Kohler. We appreciate you being with us this evening. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Rotorua Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Troy and Wally. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.